the biggest compliment that I got was I had a, you know, like curator leave and prior to leaving was like, I have to be honest with you. And I was like, okay. He's like, I have never been more repulsed and more turned on at the exact same time. And I was like, amazing. Perfect. You know, yeah, like, totally. You know.
Brooke David is an artist working out of Bushwick who has explored the relationship between art and food, specifically meat, more than most have. Her paintings are emotive, sensual, and amorphous, connecting the dots between life, death, sex, decay, and beauty. She sat down with us to share her inspirations, her passions, and her thoughts on how food and art intersect.
My name is Brooke David. I'm an artist and now a pastry cook. I started painting when I was really, really young. I got into college and I wasn't really excited about how I was learning art. So I found a mentor and I studied with him privately for like a really long time. I helped teach his classes. I studied very, very classically. I went to Florence and studied the old masters. But I was always really, really excited about learning the craft, really, really understanding the technique, because I felt like that was the only way to really begin to explore myself and my own vision. So after I really learned how to paint, I got a studio in Brooklyn. And I started painting still lifes. And that's when I really became obsessed with meat and flesh. And I always saw such a sensuality and a sexuality in meat that I was really drawn to it. First, I started with massive chickens and massive ducks and, you know, getting them and dragging them back to the studio and painting them for hours. And then I found rabbits. I discovered rabbits. And once I discovered hares, like my life kind of like totally changed. I ended up doing very massive paintings of hares that look like landscapes and abstractions, but also very, you know, like realistic. I mean, okay, hares are known for fertility. I think does can have like 42 young a year. So they were, you know, symbols of, you know, like fertility and abundance and sexuality and lust. And I remember reading that as, you know, as I was starting to pick rabbits, and I thought that like that the bodies themselves are so female and so like suggestive of being naked. And they're not just naked, they're stripped of their skin. So, I mean, I think that idea being stripped of your skin and it being something so massive and so tactile, it automatically becomes sexual, you know, and it becomes sexual without any context because you're not thinking, oh, this is a person or this is, you're thinking, God, I want to roll in this. And when you think of like rolling and you like, you instantly get warm and fuzzy and you think about sexuality, you know, it all stemmed from that, I think. I think some people like set out to make things sexual. I never did. I just set out to glorify them and they became super sexual. And I remember being like, wow, these are really, and I'm like, all right, I'm going with this. You know, like I'm rocking with that. Like if that's what I see, cause that's life is sex. I mean, sex is life. So at the end of the day, you know, you're going down to like the basic need of human. How I was taught painting was very, you know, like painting apples, you know, painting very, you know, non, you know, like suggestive fruit. Like I didn't discover some of the much more racy sexual artists until I left my mentor, you know, with him, I was studying only classical, you know, 16th century, 15th century, like never any racy, you know, like Robert Mapplethorpe or, you know, like Pierre, you know, like Moliere, who does self-portraits of himself in drag. He was amazing, you know, but very, very sexual. I didn't really find those things until I started embracing all of the, you know, like sexuality and the sensuality of the meat that I found. I always saw my carcasses as almost like my children. Like I really felt such a connection to them. Like my point of painting them was so that you could see like the beauty of them, not and see them beyond them being rabbits, seeing them almost as humans. And the like, you know, like slippery slope between what is a human versus what is a animal and how it's kind of defined. And they all really came out very, very sexual and very sensual. And I thought if you could kind of let go of the ideas or the, you know, stigmas of what meat is or what sex is, then you could kind of really just enjoy them as landscapes of flesh. They were, you know, 7 feet by 6 feet. They were massive paintings. They like I would spend a couple of months on each one. I would make color charts of them. I'd make small studies of them. You know, I really lived with them. I really invested in these in these beings. So they ended up, I think, being more than meat. You know, they were really something that was there, like, you know, like their own being.
Artists have been using animals, carcasses, and meat as inspiration for centuries and centuries. We asked Brooke about the artists and pieces that were most influential to her.
I remember the first time that I saw a, you know, Chaim Soutine painting, I was brought to tears. The way that Chaim Soutine painted very, you know, a very thick, very, you know, like impasto, very colorful. And it was something that I thought he had the painting glow from inside. And that's how I, you know, always talk about my own paintings, is that they glow from inside. There's a warmth to them. So when I saw Chaim Soutine, and then I saw, you know, like Francis Bacon, and I heard some of, you know, Chaim Soutine's story, to me, it just made sense as to that I would follow in his path. He really went against the grain of what was, you know, acceptable. He would spend hours with the same carcass. He would take fresh blood and throw it onto the carcass. He would do whatever he needed to do to capture the feeling and the, you know, essence of it. I thought that was really, you know, like very heroic. When someone asked him once, you know, why do you paint meat? He said that he once saw a village butcher slice the neck of a bird and drain the blood out. And he wanted to cry, but like the butcher's face was, you know, was so serious that he kept the cry in. And he said that he's now and forever always trying to, you know, like release that cry. He also was sharing a studio with, you know, like a bunch of different artists, and there was blood dripping out of one of the corners of the studio, and someone called and was, you know, thinking that he was dead or something was horrible, and the cops came, and he said, art comes before hygiene, you know, art is much more important than hygiene. And so that was definitely something that he, you know, he really took seriously. Well, in the beginning, I had a fridge and I was keeping my rabbits every day. And I really liked the idea of noticing how they changed, because, you know, like they begin to decay and the color's gray. And I thought that was really interesting to see as I, you know, like, you know, kept working with it. And from my history, you really have to look at the subject. But then I began to get mice, a lot of mice. And I decided that maybe I should, you know, like take photographs of them instead, because I couldn't deal with the mice. So that was also a really interesting element, because then I almost was, you know, like removed from the flesh. So I had almost an experience with the meat. After I'd photographed these rabbits, I tried to give them to, you know, some kind of, you know, like nonprofit, and no one wanted them because they didn't know how long that these rabbits were there. And that totally makes sense. And I felt bad throwing them out. And I also didn't want to eat them because I wasn't eating rabbits. I tried to offer them to people. No one really wanted it, and I didn't really blame it. So I used to do almost this, you know, like religious thing where I'd wrap them in a box and I'd put a little ribbon on them and I'd kind of thank them for their time. It sounds a little cheesy, but for me, I felt like I had this experience with them and I kind of needed to like have some kind of, you know, like ceremonial thing, you know, that like ended our relationship in a way, or like ended that part of it. So then I would work from photos, and I would always do these small studies of it. And it was also interesting to see how something that's like a 4-inch by 5-inch becomes 7.5 by 6.5 feet. It's a very different experience. And I also always painted with a knife. I never used brush. So I really became like an expert swordsman in a way. Like I was always painting with palette knife, and it was a really tactile experience for me. So Chardin was one of the first still life painters that I fell in love with. He is an 18th century French still life painter. His technique and the way that he painted was always a secret. He never, ever, no one ever saw him paint. He painted less, I believe, than 200 paintings in his life, which meant that he did like 4 paintings a year, which is crazy. But his paintings were very realistic. He did a lot of glazes and then, you know, like impasto paintings on the white to really bring up the glow factor, I guess, of it. And he has been, you know, such an influence on so many artists, on, you know, Chaim Soutine and Manet and, you know, like Lucian Freud. I mean, all like the greats that have dealt with meat. I'm sure Francis Bacon, you know, all of these studied him. And something I thought that was very interesting was that his setup of the still life was brought back in, you know, 2002, when a artist called Sam Taylor Wood did a video called A Little Death, where she basically took a fresh killed rabbit in the exact, or in a very similar, you know, like composition as Chardin. And in a 4.5 minute video, you watch it from being freshly killed to total decay. And it's stunning. I mean, it's such an amazing piece. And, you know, it goes from life, this thing with fur and fresh killed, and you can almost feel it and taste it, and then to total decay. And the bones are sticking out and the fur is everywhere and there's insects crawling around. And it's a really interesting cycle of life.
Lady Gaga is famous for the meat dress that she wore at the 2010 MTV Video Awards, but Brooke explained to us that that's not the first time that idea had been explored.
The first meat dress was Jana Sterbeck in 1987, and it was called Vanitas, the flesh dress for an albino anorexic. So it was a dress that was composed of 60 pounds of raw flank steak that was sewn together and shown in the National Gallery of Canada. She did it as a statement for vanity and for, you know, like bodily decay, but also I think that the reason why she called it the flesh dress for, you know, like albino anorexic, because she was also talking about girls of that time that were kind of struggling with their own, you know, weight versus what is ideal and you see in, you know, like magazines. And so there was a big epidemic of anorexia and, you know, bulimia. So she was really talking about that. And she was really talking about women being seen as meat. And that was really controversial. And, you know, like a lot of people were really upset and they felt like she was wasting meat because she basically, each time that this was shown, she had to redo it. So there had to be, you know, brought in more, you know, 60 pounds of beef. And I think that it was, she spent $350 or $260 on the meat itself. And people were, you know, floored by that. They were so angry by that. And they thought it was such a horrible waste. But she was really talking about, as women, how we're seen, and also to kind of shock you and to also show you, like, the, you know, bodily decay and how if you looked at the meat or you came back and visited it, it would change color and change texture and, you know, change smell, obviously. So it was a really interesting piece.
Perhaps the most seminal performance piece involving raw meat was Meat Joy by Carolee Schneeman in 1964.
Meat Joy is what they called a happening. It's like a video piece. The piece has eight dancers in it, and they're all semi-nude. There's like men and women, and they begin in the beginning just dancing. And then as they're dancing, you know, freshly killed or, you know, dead chickens and sausage and fish are kind of piled onto them and then wet paint. And then you see them and they're dancing and they're gyrating and they're, you know, kind of, you know, moving around and twisting, you know, and, you know, like interacting with each other and biting the chickens. And it's a real, you know, chaos of movement and mixtures of different things. It's very erotic. It's really sensual. And it's played to, you know, rock music. So there's also this really weird element that you see this very barbaric thing of, you know, women being dragged across the floor with this paint. And then you hear like rock music in the background. This was one of the game changers. I mean, people, you know, it was also seen as, you know, is it feminist body art? Is it, you know, what exactly does it mean? And because it has so many different meanings, you know, it's been referenced over and over again. It actually was referenced in, you know, like another, in a show in 2008 called Meat After Meat Joy, which they showed Meat Joy, but then they also showed pieces that were done that were dealing with meat. But it was really how various artists can, you know, explore meat in, you know, like relationship to their own body.
So after years of finding inspiration from food and meat in her artwork, Brooke David decided to go to culinary school and learn to be a pastry cook.
In the beginning at culinary school, I was very overwhelmed because, you know, I know my craft as art, but I as far as culinary, I was, you know, amiss. And I told you I was ghetto gourmet queen. So, you know, it was hysterical. And I really got into the meanings behind everything. So, for example, puff pastry was actually invented by a French landscape painter who, you know, like apprenticed as a baker, you know, for a little bit. So he was, the rumor is that he was making bread for his sick father, and he somehow messed it up and he twisted it and he twisted the, you know, dough, and it ended up looking like a croissant. And then he got this idea of doing this, you know, layers and layers of puff. Reading that made me super excited because those are things I find super interesting. I love this idea of, you know, like relating food to art, and it's something I've just gotten into. So I'm beginning to really do research on it. I'm a pastry cook at Marlowe & Sons. It has been super intense. It's great. I'm learning a lot. It's very humbling, I think, to get to a certain point in one craft and then start over in something else and have no idea. But I also try not to take myself too seriously. And I think the best way to go into anything is to kind of ask a lot of questions and be stupid and just say, I don't know, rather than pretending like I do. So I make a lot of mistakes and, or at least I used to. Now I'm getting much better. And I really like the staff and I like how it's being led. So it's been great. Well, now that I'm doing desserts, I'm really interested in bringing elements of food or meat or mixing the two of, you know, pastry and meat. That's something I'm really, really interested in. I just did another series of actually bodies that look like meat. So it's like an orgy of bodies that has turned into a scarf that actually is going to be my friend is going to be selling on her online gallery soon. And it's just like an orgy of meat that is actually people just, you know, combined, you know, piling on top of each other. And that was almost like taking it, you know, like a step further, because it was going away from the meat, but it was still like the same idea of these juicy things kind of coming together, laying on top of each other. Yeah, like you don't know what is the arm and what's the leg. And, you know, and that's really what I liked so much about the rabbits, is that if you focused in on them enough or you cropped them in, you forgot where one started and where one ended. It was a really evolving cycle.
See for yourself. Visit brookfdavid.com and look at some of her artwork. Thanks for listening to this special program on heritageradionetwork.org. The piece was produced and edited by Jack Inslee, with music provided courtesy of Knife Show. Thanks to the International Culinary Center for making this piece possible. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.